Mr. Cade.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Nathaniel Cade of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Freddie Perkins. I think the briefs pretty much well lay out the arguments. There are a few points, though, that I would like to address. In particular, I think the main thing that the government fails to refute is the fact that the district court got it wrong in terms of the quantity of drugs that the jury was shown. Hands down. The PSR identifies 300.6, but of that, grams of cocaine base, 81.7 never went to the jury. Never. And the government doesn't come back and say, oh no, on this page they were shown additional drugs. So, first and foremost, the jury was given the wrong number in which to convict the defendant. They should never have been, 280 should never have been on the special verdict. Perhaps the government at some point intended to introduce evidence of a transaction in Minnesota and never did, but that was their choice. So first and foremost, there was an error in terms of the drug quantity that was presented to the jury. Certainly the district court can consider other evidence, and it did consider other evidence. But with regards to the additional evidence, even then, the judge on the one hand says that Charity McKnight, yeah, she's a heavy crack user. You could see it in her eyes. You could see it in her testimony. I have a hard time, you know, she's a heavy seller. She's a heavy user. But then turns around and never says, I find her to be credible, but attributes her testimony. So the entire Minnesota transaction should never have been presented. At the most, Mr. Perkins should have been convicted of about 218 grams of cocaine base, which would reduce or change the underlying sentence. So that's one error that the government has to concede because the PSR is the Bible and it clearly is an error. Now the other, though, the heart of this appeal is, okay, even if this court reverses on that issue, Mr. Perkins still faces a 20-year mandatory minimum. And I think how the government went about arresting, charging Mr. Perkins is the issue this court needs to look at. They're observing him for over a year. He just gets picked up by chance by Henry County. It wasn't a coordination between state and federal. He just got picked up for selling drugs. And as soon as he gets out, 55 days later, the feds decide to charge him. Certainly, if you look at the drug quantities, and again, how you calculate Minnesota or not, if you include the Minnesota transaction, less than 20% of the drug sales occurred after he gets out of Henry County. If you don't include it, we're under 10%. And why is that important? Because, yes, Mr. Perkins gets out of Henry County jail. He does his 90 days. He continues selling drugs. But he's not doing anything different than he was doing before. Before he got picked up by Henry County, he was selling drugs and the feds were watching him. The feds didn't say, hey, once Mr. Perkins went to jail, we stopped watching. They were watching his co-conspirators. So the entire conspiracy, as far as the federal government is concerned, was ongoing. Nowhere do they say, hey, during those 90 days since Mr. Perkins was locked up, we're going to stop, we're going to pack up all of our stuff, we're going to go somewhere else. No, they were still going after the co-conspirators. So
the problem is we just don't have a sentencing manipulation defense in this circuit. We don't recognize, I mean, that's where this argument is going. We don't recognize that defense. This can't be entrapment because, I mean, it's very clear that this was part of an ongoing pattern of drug dealing, so he wasn't entrapped, which is a recognized defense, but this argument that the government manipulated the case and delayed charging for purposes of getting an enhanced penalty, we don't recognize that in this circuit, and you've got to give us some reason to change that doctrine.
Yes, Judge Sykes. Actually, there's 2 points to that, though. The one point is, yes, there's the sentencing manipulation, but the other point, which is goes hand in hand, is if, in fact, this is one conspiracy, so it never stopped, then Mr. Perkins should never have gotten the 20-year mandatory minimum. He should have gotten a 10-year mandatory minimum. And the court never addresses that. The court just says, based on the PSR, well, yes, he gets out, he has a sentence, so therefore we're going to say it's a prior conviction and enhance the penalty. The difference, though, is if the government, if the conspiracy is ongoing and is never stopped, and it's one continuous pattern, then that arrest is not a prior conviction. If it's not a prior conviction, it's a 10-year mandatory minimum. The second point with regards to the sentencing manipulation, your question, yes, it is not recognized in this court. But at some point, you have other jurisdictions that have recognized it, that do look at this and say, you know, the government can come in and manipulate sentences. And it's not just the other circuits recognizing this. The Attorney General even admitted as much when he addressed the ABA in August, that, you know, we've got these mandatory minimums, we're dangling these things in front of defendants saying, hey, if you go to trial, if you do anything else, you're facing 20 years. At some point, we have to look at the government and say, you know, if you clearly had the ability to arrest this individual, he's clearly selling all of the drugs before the Henry County arrest and conviction, what are you waiting for? There is no basis to say, maybe he'll sell more. Well, he's already selling more. There's no basis to wait to arrest him when they had more than enough evidence. They had a year of observation to make a determination that, in fact, he's selling.
What's the legal basis for that defense? You know, it's within the Attorney General's prerogative to decide how he wants to direct his attorneys and agents in the field to handle these cases. But
right.
From our standpoint, we need a legal basis. So what is the actual foundation in law for this defense, which other circuits employ from time to time, but we don't?
Well, I think the other circuits, when they employ it, more specifically, they are looking at some point to the government, you have your evidence, what are you, you know, are you doing something to force the defendant?
That's a descriptive statement. I need
correct.
To say, what's the law? What is the legal basis? Is
honestly,
there
Judge Sykes,
constitutional right to be charged? We've said no.
No, there is no constitutional right to be charged, but there is a constitutional right, I do think, to, in essence, a coercion of the defendant and to, you know, you could face higher penalties. In fact, we're going to butt with a couple things so that you do face higher penalties. So we get our conviction rate. So we have, you know, the higher minimum.
So how do we articulate the standard? Is it when the government has accumulated proof beyond a reasonable doubt they must stop, or when they have, don't they get the opportunity to identify all of the participants in the conspiracy and the origin of the drugs? How do we articulate where this barrier is that they can't go beyond?
Judge Tinder, unfortunately, I don't have this. This would not be the case if I were in your shoes. And you had a plethora of cases where the sentencing manipulation defense was raised, this would not be the case that I would turn around because factually the issues were never addressed below. The trial court, it was raised by counsel. I had a conversation with trial counsel. It was raised, it was put in the briefs, but it was never developed by the district court. So unfortunately, the record that both you and I are looking at is not that good.
Well, Ms. Gade, how much of a hearing could you have into prosecutorial discretion? I mean, for example, as is often the case, the government can charge five counts, choose to charge three counts. I mean, how would we go? What would a trial judge do? And what would be the parameters of inquiry of the government on require them to explain a delay, as you would have it, in the charge or whatever? I mean, would they have to explain there are other people in the field they're seeking? I'm just troubled as to what guidance, if we were to adopt such a position, one would give to a trial judge if he was requested or she was requested to have such a hearing.
Yes, Judge Flom. I think that one of the things you've hit the nail on the head, are you looking for other people? Are there other potential conspirators? Are you looking for the source of the narcotics? Are you looking to see if there are a larger operation that's going on here? Okay, that's not the case here. The case here is they had information. They're watching him. It's the same three people that are selling over a year's time period, and they're selling basically small amounts of crack cocaine. He's out on the street. Car drives by. He gets in. He sells it. Gets back out. There's not this large operation where, you know, there's some drug kingpin that he's visiting every day that they could say, that's what we're trying to find out. So at some point, yes, there is prosecutorial discretion, but at the same time, you have to say, what are you waiting for over a year on this guy? I mean, he's not the drug kingpin.
All right. We've asked you a fair number of questions. I'll give you some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Cade. All right. Mr. Childress?
May it please the Court, John Childress on behalf of Appellee, the United States of America. The last point of discussion with opposing counsel centered around the sentencing entrapment and sentencing manipulation issue, and if I can, I'll briefly address that. As I've stated in my brief, the government causes a defendant or the government commits sentencing entrapment when it causes a defendant initially predisposed to commit a lesser crime to commit a more serious offense. And the defendant must show a lack of predisposition to commit that offense and that that will or his or her will was overborne by unrelenting government pressure. A high standard, to say the least, and opposing counsel, quite frankly, took the words right out of my mouth when he noted the defendant's behavior in the context of that argument was that he didn't do anything he wasn't doing before. Specifically, the defendant's sales of crack cocaine continued unabated after his state conviction.
Well, I think we could put aside the entrapment argument, as I thought, but what about the manipulation argument?
When we go to the manipulation argument, as the court noted during the other half of the argument, this circuit does not recognize that argument. And I think some of the discussion centered upon why it doesn't. You have a very difficult time determining when, if at all, you're going to curtail an investigation, prosecutorial discretion, the counts or the information that are brought. And while I didn't address it in great length in my brief, I think those arguments all bring to bear the difficulty in recognizing that argument, specifically as recognized by this court, that the defendant does not enjoy a constitutional right to be charged at a certain time.
This Henry County conviction was a straight possession conviction, I take it? And
That's correct.
Did he get probation? Or?
I believe it was a 90-day sentence, Your Honor.
Okay.
And probation was a context of that. The term of imprisonment was very brief, and probation was a part of the sentence.
Well, 90 days is a jail sentence, so he's probably in and out in less than that with time served.
Considerably less, yes, Your Honor.
So then he's back out selling again.
He is, Your Honor, and I note two instances of that. There was a controlled purchase involving the defendant directly on October 20th of 2011, shortly after the state conviction became effective. And in addition to that, the defendant's co-conspirators continued to distribute crack cocaine in the month after that.
And the 20-year statutory minimum was by virtue of the prior under 841 or by virtue of the drug quantity or both?
By virtue, significantly, in the context of this case, by virtue of the prior, Your Honor.
Okay. And what else is on his record?
Other than that prior, Your Honor?
Right.
In the context of this case, I'm not aware of anything else, although I honestly don't know. I know that this was the state.
Is there something else about this defendant that the government thought it needed 20 years?
Your Honor, this case, this defendant particularly, has been characterized as not a drug kingpin. I'm not quite sure that gives accurate perspective to the scope of the conspiracy. It was a multi-state conspiracy. The distribution was from the city of Aurora into Kewaunee and also into Winona, Minnesota. So we begin to expand the context of this conspiracy. And while it's not hundreds of kilograms and hundreds of millions of dollars, it is of some reach, it is of some duration, and I think significantly it involves at least three people, and I know the brief, my brief addresses this, upwards of five, because we begin to have Confederates in surrounding states that not only are caught in the context of this case through a search warrant with mm-hmm. drugs, but also dealing with the supply chain. It was a case of some significance for those reasons, and the defendant's behavior, and I want to emphasize that, it was the defendant's behavior and his continuation of the sale of crack cocaine that put him in the position that the state conviction rendered the significant penalty. There was also some discussion before the bench about the drug amount. As the court is well aware, this court affords substantial deference to the trial court in its evaluation, especially as to the credibility of the witnesses. When we discuss the findings, and this was discussed in the lower court, the findings about the amount of drugs that were afforded or assessed to the defendant by the jury, the lower court specifically relied upon the testimony of the defendant's co-conspirator, Ms. McKnight. I've cited the portion of the transcript in which the lower court did rely on that. Ms. McKnight, like many people involved in drug activity, carries, quite frankly, a little baggage with her. The court noted that, but again, in the context of this case, the court, lower court took pains to assess the credibility and relied upon that testimony. If there are no further questions, I thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Childress. Mr. Cade, you may have an additional 2 minutes.
Thank you, Judge Flom. Again, a couple things that Mr. Childress has been very kind to me in our conversations on the phone. His brief, however, notes or fails to note that the amount of drugs shown to the jury was not 280, was not 300.6. It was 218 that was shown to the jury. Right then and there, that is error. At a minimum, that should be reversed. Then again, the conspiracy. He conceded directly that while Mr. Perkins was incarcerated for, it was a little less than 90 days, I believe it was 70-some days, Judge Sykes, that he actually was jailed, and then he received 24 months probation from Henry County, that the conspiracy went on. Again, it's part and parcel of the same transactions. The feds are watching him. He is arrested. They're still watching the co-conspirators. He comes back. He resumes operations. So that is a 10-year mandatory minimum, not a 20-year mandatory minimum. And if it was such a large conspiracy and involved all these people, the two additional people from Minnesota were never brought in to testify. They were never questioned. The jury never saw them. So if it's the scope and the reach is so broad, why didn't the government put that on? The only person that went to trial was Mr. Perkins. The other two co-conspirators both pled out, but they chose not to present Minnesota evidence. Now they're saying, well, it's a large conspiracy. That's why we wanted 20 years. No, they wanted 20 years because that's what they dangled in front of him, and he wouldn't take the deal.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Childress. Thank you, Mr. Cade. Mr. Cade, you were accepted appointment in this case, and you have the additional thanks of the court for ably representing the defendant.
Thank you, Judge.
All right. Case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the fourth case.